When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Okay, so in this walk, I talk about spiritual capacity. And I think it's important to understand that it's not just spiritual capacity I'm speaking of, but it's position, it's power, it's status, it's ability, it's choice and freedom as well. Just consider that as we take this walk.
So there are rumors now going around from the episode I did on Deseret Book that was titled Deseret Book Now Supports the Pride Flag and Same-Sex Partners, which they do. The rumors, though, are a little different. It's funny how these things work. You need to go through the grapevine, kind of like the game Telephone. And so this is what's coming back to me. People are saying, hey, we've called Deseret Book. They say that they do not wave the pride flag or put the pride flag up anywhere in their bookstores. And I've never said that. I never said that. But that's what it has come to. And so, and this is not just one person, right? This is actually several people, which means there are many more people that have heard based off of this episode that Deseret Book is now waving the pride flag or putting the pride flag up in the bookstores. He specifically said, I went to Deseret Book and walked around and I didn't see a pride flag anywhere. As if that's discrediting the episode that I did. I also know that the president of Deseret Book, not Sherry Du, who is, I think, still the CEO, the president, she sent out a cut and paste email to many people that had emailed Deseret Book to find out what in the world is going on. So this cut and paste email from the president of Deseret Book basically says we do not support the pride flag and we do not support same-sex partners. But that's just not true. This video that was produced on Seek, S-E-E-K, .deseretbook.com with Ben Shalotti specifically supports the pride flag, saying what else can you do besides wave the pride flag in your front yard to support the LGBTQ community? And then the one example that is used about how to speak to LGBTQ members of the church, he brings in a gay member of the church who says, I've been praying about it and I have now decided that I'm going to date other men and I am seeking a partner. That's his example of that. And nothing about the law of chastity, nothing about the commandments. This is simply an act not of love, but of tolerance and a misplaced compassion. It's wrong. It's not the right way to do this. And you're seeing this more and more. It's not like this is an isolated event and you have no context for it. We all see what is happening. And these subsidiaries of the church are moving right along with it. So I've never said that they wave the pride flag yet. Not that we're not going to see that in the future in a place like Deseret Book. It's not going to surprise me. It shouldn't surprise you if that happens. A lot of these subsidiaries are very much bowing to a very woke culture. And I think it's pretty tough at this point to have a surprise hit you like seeing a pride flag in Deseret Book. So I doubled down completely on the title of the video of the episode and say absolutely that Deseret Book is supporting the pride flag, what it represents, and the same-sex partnership. Number two, and this is pretty interesting, on debt, the U.S. debt. We're going to start taking emergency steps today in the U.S. to stay under the debt limit. Now, why is this necessary? Well, because we're close to needing to borrow more than it's allowed to pay its bills. The current debt limit in the U.S. is $31.4 trillion. And we continue to edge up and up and up. And this isn't just a matter of, well, we're going to keep up with inflation. It is ever increasingly a higher and higher ratio to GDP. And is very concerning. And so you take any time you or I go into debt, it's not that going into debt at all or for anything is a bad thing. But as you go further and further into debt, whether it's mortgage, cars, credit cards, other installment loans, and you add the interest onto that, you're messing around with some real issues because you become beholden to the debt and to the debt holders, which a lot are foreign countries like China. And so that becomes a very difficult issue to deal with and very irresponsible. You think about an eternal principle. Well, do you go and find a short-term solution for your problems of spending by continuing to raise the debt ceiling and spend more and more money, especially in a time of already time of inflation? See, the more the government spends right now, the higher inflation, it's harder to keep inflation down. We're already in a, really more than we believe, a higher hyperinflationary period. And so higher spending means higher inflation. So what would the eternal principle be there? How would you handle that? You look toward the long term and how you can, what is going to happen to the next generation? Who's going to continue to have a larger and larger debt to pay? It's not right. You and I, when we borrow money, we only have a limited bucket capacity of where we can go with it to be able to pay it off. It's amazing how easy it is to spend money when it's OPM, right? Other people's money. And that's what the government has. They have other people's money. They don't generate any of their own revenue. They are working off of our tax funds. And so you just simply say, we're going to spend more, which means we are going to gather more in taxes, require more in taxes, and we're going to pay more in interest, and we're going to cause the devaluation of the dollar more and more. Very irresponsible. Lastly, I want to talk a little bit about those on the fringe, those that are marginalized. Again, I think this is really important to see things in a way that is, I'm pretty harsh on the woke principles, critical social justice, and I need to be. I think everybody needs to be because it's extremely pernicious. But that doesn't mean you lose sight of the marginalized. The problem with the way that critical social justice and wokeness works is that it works using the idea of compassion for those that are marginalized, but it's misplaced. And so the natural thing to do is, well, we're fighting against this, so we're going to push against these ideas of fighting for the marginalized. And I see a lot of people fall into that area. For example, woke principles fight against capitalism. And I'll get responses from members here in the audience that are going to say that's ridiculous. No, it's not ridiculous. It's everywhere. All of the movers and shakers of critical social justice are anti-capitalist. And because it provides a disparity for people that are sometimes on the margins. It helps them quite a bit, but it also can provide a disparity if there's a lack of charity, if there's a lack of support. You cannot have a purely libertarian capitalism by itself. It's not right. It's kind of like saying, the law itself is a great framework for us to work from. The law of God is a great framework for us to work from. But without the mercy, without the charity, without the higher law of what is spiritual and the gifts from God, including the Savior, the law is dead on its own. And that's how I would see capitalism. It's dead on its own unless there is charity infused in it to help resolve the issues of disparity. And when we step back with that charity and we don't see that, and we fight for this every man for himself type of an idea that is found in a free society, and do that without love and without charity, it's a dead law in the end. It's dead. And so charity must exist, and it must be there. We can look at something from the Savior and his teachings. At the end of his ministry, last week of his life, Jesus gives us three parables. The parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, and the parable of the, this is in Matthew 25, and the parable of the sheep and the goats. And it's kind of interesting that these three are paired together, right? This triage of this trio of parables given, I believe, on the same day. Because in the parable of the 10 virgins, you have a separation. And the principle there is, look, you cannot borrow the light, ultimately. And we are living in that day, for sure. You cannot borrow the light from LDS culture and LDS support. If you are not in a anchor to a bedrock of doctrine and testimony today, you're going to struggle. It's going to be impossible, I believe, for you to stick around. And so he's showing us that. You better be anchored, because he's preparing for a second coming. He's about to leave, right? He's about to be crucified. And so it's about preparation and about how we anchor ourselves. Secondly, he goes to the parable of the talents. And this is, I've got about, I don't know, I guess maybe a dozen pet peeves in cultural doctrine for Latter-day Saints. This is definitely one of them on this parable. So often it has been taught in a way that talks about like playing music, right, as your talent, or playing the piano, or whatever skill that you obtain, or whatever, singing, etc. That is not what it means. Talents are a piece of silver. It's not talking about your personal talents. There is an indirect way to get there, to these personal talents, but that's not what the talents are. The talents are your capacity. The talents are your capacity. And you see the three different servants. The one with five goes out and magnifies those. That's not about becoming rich. It's not about adding more talents as far as your musical or physical skills. It's about increasing your capacity, your wealth of capacity, of personal progression. So he goes out, he basically invests the five, trades, and comes back with five more. And he's heavily blessed. Why? Because he's helping those through his spiritual gifts. He is helping those that don't have the same capacity as him or her, right? That's why it increases. The capacity grows. The progression increases. And then you have the servant that has two talents. It's two, right? Yeah, two talents. And that servant goes out, does the same thing. In other words, we're all in different positions. There is disparity. It's the opposite of what we find in an ideology that focuses on a forced outcome. It's the exact opposite. Jesus is saying we all have different gifts and we're all at different levels. That's the way it is supposed to be, because we then can offer charity to others. We can offer love. And our job is to work with each other and lift each other up. That servant with two talents may be missing other things that are needed in his or her life. And he or she needs to reach to somebody else that is willing to offer their silver talents, their capacity to pull them up. But that servant goes out, invests the two, trades the two, and comes back with two more. So same exact thing, but from a different position of capacity, a lower position. But now that servant has four, similar to where the servant was that had five to begin with. And then the last servant has one. And this is an issue because to me, this is a lesson not just for those that have a lot more talents or a lot more capacity, but for those that don't. Those that are marginalized, those that are in a lower position of, in the hierarchical structure of disparity and privilege, if you want to call it that, in our society. That servant, as an example, takes the one. Why is it the person with one? Because we're talking about spiritual gifts. It's a person with one. The servant with one that goes out and hides that capacity, hides that talent in the ground, and comes back and hasn't increased it. And the Lord is not happy with this. So if we are lower on the level of disparity and more on the margins, the idea is not to hide your talent from the Lord. Your capacity. You need to search what you have and increase it like everybody else. The plan of salvation is a fluid hierarchy. You can move to 2, then 4, then 8, then 16, etc. Everybody has that opportunity. That's the key. You don't need a forced outcome as we get from Lucifer in his ideology in the war in heaven. That takes all of the charity away and all of the personal progression away, which is 100% antithetical to the plan of salvation. The third parable is where we come back to, okay, now we've had those with one talent that are now in a position of, what do I do? Do I invest the one talent? Or do I hide it? And I would suggest also that victimhood is an ideology that asks you to hide that spiritual capacity. It asks you to hide it away. And in that parable, as I see it, my estimation is that is those on the fringe. Those that are on the margins. And it's not just a responsibility of those that have the talents or that have the capacity to change everything. It is required, but it's not the only thing that's required. The only way we can grow is by making the right decisions and expanding or metaphorically increasing those silver talents in our growth, leaning on the atoning sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the gospel of principles. But the third one, the sheep and the goats, is interesting because this goes now back to the marginalized. Those that are lacking, those that may only have one talent or half a talent or no talents. And this is what it says here. This is in Matthew 25. For I was an hungered and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger and ye took me in. He's talking about what the sheep have done that are sitting on his right hand. Right, the right hand is of righteousness and covenant. And ye took me in, naked and ye clothed me. I was sick and ye visited me. I was in prison and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer and say, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee? Or thirsty and gave thee drink? And he says, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto me, or inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these, the least, so the marginalized, the only one talent individuals, inasmuch as ye have done this unto the least of me, ye have done it unto me. So with the parable of the talents, we're shown the responsibility of those that are marginalized. All of us, we all have the same principle we have to follow, no matter where we're at. It is the only way to grow. You do not change the principles for each individual, for each race, for each sexual orientation, for each economic class, for each ethnicity. That's not how it works. That is not the plan of the Lord. Then he goes back to the goats, which are on his left hand. You don't want to be a goat. He goes back to the goats on the left hand, and he says the same thing. And they answer and say, well, when did we do this? And he says, you didn't. You didn't do this unto me. You didn't do this unto the marginalized. You did not take care of those that only had one talent. You did not take care of those who had no talents, that had a lower capacity, that are unprivileged, that are in a more difficult position. And so he separates. Simply, those on his right are those who have taken care of the marginalized. They are the sheep. And those that are on his left are those that did not take care of the marginalized. When we have a framework in place with freedom and the ability to make decisions, to expand and grow, freedom of religion, etc., and we do not exercise that charity, we create a massive void that allows pernicious ideologies to enter in to look for a different solution for those who are not taken care of. Now look, in the U.S., we're the richest country in the world. Even our poor are better off than in many nations in the country. So I'm not talking just about economics here. That certainly is there. But I'm talking about spiritual capacity. I'm talking about spreading the gospel and its really its principles and its tenets. It's not just about Joseph Smith, and even not just about the atoning sacrifice of Jesus Christ. That's what anchors everything. But it is lifting others. It is offering charity in the same way that the Savior offered everything for us to bear our burdens. That is the doctrine of Christ, lowering himself, condescending.
Thanks for taking this walk with me. I'll talk to you next time.